Jeremy. Like Jeremy said, I'm looking at the effects of timber as a biofuel on the occupancy and habitat suitability of the Indiana bat and the gray bat in the state of Tennessee. So I'm sure everyone's been hearing a lot, maybe way too much, about biofuel lately. It's great. Everyone says that we can improve our national security if we're creating our own fuel. We can stimulate local economies with the production. And some people think we can reduce our carbon emissions. And recently I read an article that described Tennessee as the Saudi Arabia of ethanol production. So it's going to be big. It's not actually a new thing, though. We actually get, we currently have 7% of our energy supplies come from renewable sources. And about 50% of this comes from biomass. So we actually have a significant amount of our energy coming from biomass already. And biomass can include, it's a bunch of different things. It's not just corn like everyone hears about. It can be any type of food crop that has a high sugar, such as corn, soybeans, sorghum. And we can use the residues from these crops as well, the corn and stover. Lots of perennials. I'm sure everyone's heard of switchgrass. Rapidly growing grass that we can harvest potentially multiple times a year. Any type of other residues, such as construction residue or production residues, we can also use. And I'm specifically going to be looking at timber residues because it's something that we can already produce, and it's an easy thing to study at this point. So if you can see in this chart, we currently get about 46 million dry tons of wood residue a year. The pink part of the graph shows our unexploited wood residue. That's just wood residue that we don't use for anything. And there's a potential for 16 million dry tons of growth in this. So it's a really good area to look. We have great potential, and we're not even using it all already. So it would be a great candidate for biofuel. There are lots of potential negative impacts of biofuel production. It's still pretty... So these are really important things to consider when we're looking at creating a state or national biofuel production plan. We could potentially decrease our site productivity and decrease our soil conservation. So basically, if we're taking more out, when we're taking more parts of the plant out, or we're taking the limbs and tops of trees out, we're leaving less in the soil, which could increase our dependence on fertilizers, which is not a good thing. We could potentially increase our carbon emissions by any type of land conversion where we're releasing carbon from the soil, releases more carbon into the atmosphere. This could potentially have worse carbon emissions than our current fossil fuel consumption. We can also decrease biodiversity. Any type of monoculture would do this. Some people say that by removing more, we're reducing the chance of wildfires, which could improve our biodiversity. But I think that wildfires are a natural way to maintain many stages of biodiversity. But the characteristic that I'm looking at is reduced quality of wildlife habitat. So any type of land conversion, increasing edge effects, increasing patches, building roads, this is what's of concern to me. So this map right here shows biodiversity in the state of Tennessee. And we're actually, the state is really rich in biodiversity. And they're not a lot of conservation measures in, except for current Endangered Species Act. So it could potentially be an area of concern with new biofuel production, land conversion, and all this biodiversity. So there are 20 endangered mammal species in the state, and 4 of these are listed federally. These species include the Carolina northern flying squirrel, the Virginia big-eared bat, which isn't actually confirmed in Tennessee, it's just thought to reside here, the Indiana bat and the gray bat. And I'm looking at these species, the Indiana bat and the gray bat. They have very particular habitat requirements. Lots of them depend on trees. So I wanted to look at them in relation to wood residues as a biofuel. And also, they're really sensitive to habitat changes, so there could potentially be big side effects for these species. So the goal of my research is to determine how utilizing timber as a biofuel will affect the quality of Indiana bat and gray bat habitat in the state of Tennessee. And for my objectives, I'd like to determine both the current and potential logging residue availability in the state of Tennessee that could be utilized for biofuel. I want to determine potential suitable habitat for both of these species. I want to determine areas that are actually occupied by these bat species. And then, based on the last two, I'd like to determine areas of concern by comparing areas with high biofuel productivity with key bat habitat. So for my methods, I wanted to first look at the logging residue availability. And I obtained data from FIA that included logging residue availability and removal in Tennessee by county. And then I took the annual removals by county and multiplied it by 65%. And this is recognized in the literature as the maximum percentage of logging residues that could be utilized for biofuels. And this is considering other current uses for wood residues and soil conservation issues. And once I've done this, I wanted to locate the areas in the state with the highest removals. So here's a graph of the state of Tennessee. The counties in the darkest brown have the highest annual removals available for biofuel production. If you can see, we have an area centered around the Cumberland Plateau with really high production, and an area in the western part of the state. And there are 11 counties with production greater than 250,000 dry tons of wood residue available for biomass production. So these are the two areas that I really wanted to look at in terms of bat habitat, because these could potentially have the highest productivity and could have the most land change for biofuel production. So now that I know those two areas of the state, I wanted to look at potential suitable habitat for the two bat species. So basically, I needed to determine the most important habitat characteristics for each of the species. For example, for Indiana bat, I could use distance from caves, distance from water, elevation, percent tree cover. These aren't my final characteristics, but they are potential ones that have shown up in the literature over and over again. And then for each of these characteristics, I'll determine the suitability on a scale of 0 to 1, and then create a layer for them in GIS. So basically, if I was looking at distance from caves, it's understood that bats tend to not forage more than 5 miles away from their roosting cave. So if you're 0 miles from the cave, you'd get a suitability of 1. If you're 5 miles or greater, a suitability of 0. And then I'm going to overlay these layers in GIS to determine the best habitat. So those that have the highest suitability overlap would be the best habitat for these two species. Here's an example of a habitat suitability model for the northern long-eared bat. It's known to have similar habitat requirements to the Indiana bat. So this is just an example to look at what they utilized and how they did the how they created their model. They looked at mature forest, density of large snags, forest blocks, interspersion of root sites and foraging, and distance from water, which is one I know that I'm going to use for my model. There are also several models out there for the Indiana bat already, but each model uses different characteristics, so I'm going to try to filter through those and find the ones that are closest to habitat in Tennessee to determine what might be important. So after I've identified the suitable habitat or potential areas in the state that could be occupied, I want to actually look at real data for bats to determine where they're known to occupy. So in the summer of 2003, there was a bat survey conducted over 6 nights. And they did anabat surveys for the full night for 6 nights in June and July. And they had at least 2 sectors out each night, but there were a total of 25 occurrences. And I'm going to divide each night into 4 units for a repeat so that we can determine the probability of detection and probability of occurrence. And I am going to assume closure between each of these 4 units. There's some debate whether I can do that or not, because bats perform different activities over the course of a night. So they might have higher foraging from, say, 7 p.m. to 10 p.m. Might be pretty inactive between 10 and 1 a.m. But I've read some other studies, and people that did this, they didn't see significant difference in bat detectability between the time periods, so I'm just going to assume closure. So with this data, I'm going to conduct an occupancy model and program MARC using the 25 occurrences, the 4 repeats, and I'm going to look at the following covariates. I'm going to look at time of night that the bat was detected, the average temperature, and the average precipitation for that night, and these will help determine the probability of the bat. And then I'm going to look at each of the habitat suitability characteristics that I use in both my model and other renowned existing models. And then the overall habitat suitability index. And these characteristics will actually determine the probability risk of occurrence for the bat species. So once I've run the occupancy model with all these different covariates, I'll see which model has the best fit or the lowest AIC model. And this will help me determine which characteristics actually do have the biggest effect on detection probability and which have the biggest effect on their actual occurrence. So once I know the covariates, I'm going to create a new habitat suitability model. And this is going to utilize the habitat characteristics that could be the most important to its occupancy. And then once I do this, I'm going to compare the new habitat suitability model with the current model of biofuel production. So I can determine where key bat habitat overlays biofuel productivity. And then once I can see those areas of concern, I'm going to create a forecast model for biofuel production and determine how this could affect the habitat suitability of the two species in the future. So basically, like with my data, I want to not just look at these things separately, but help sort of create an action plan for when we are doing biofuel production in the state to keep these species in mind. They're rare endangered species, and I think they should be at the forefront of the planning for this. But that's all I have so far. I'd like to thank Dr. Hodges, Dr. Muller, Dr. Clark, Doug Tipley, Andy Hartzell, and Jimei Guo for helping me with this. Are there any questions?
Define a little more specifically what you mean by logging residue. Is it stuff that's on the ground, slash, and so on?
So the question is, what specifically do I mean by logging residue? That can be anything. Lots of times it's like pulpwood that's left over from any type of logging. It can be branches, tops, anything that's typically not used. Traditionally, that stuff is used for any type of timber production, but they're just looking at utilizing more of it to expand our use of it.
So for you, that's a proxy for more logging in general?
Yeah.
I was wondering what the connection is with slash on the ground and the bat
Well, the Indiana bat, they reside in partially dead trees, which is stuff that's
snag.
Right, which could easily be used for biofuel, stuff that might traditionally be left because it can't be utilized for timber.
So
definitely.
Okay, right. Plus, along with that would be a lot of logging in general.
Right. 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 Yeah. The question was, would I be ready to look at the long-term effects on the insects, which they forage for? And I don't know like how I would cover that in my study, but it's definitely going to be have a huge impact if they're taking more off the ground, which is great, you know, insect production, the area on the ground. I think that will have a huge effect on it, but I don't know if I'll be able to cover that in my study necessarily.
I want to make sure I understood relative to Dave's question. When you talk about the industry whole tree removal,
mm-hmm.
So they'll use the log for whatever they use it for, but the slash left on the ground, we're not talking about edging at the plant, we're talking about removing all items from all biomass from the site.
Right. I mean, they're definitely, lots of this is sort of like projections of what we're going to be able to do, but technically you could take the whole tree and utilize the whole tree, but there are definitely huge issues with soil conservation issues, so if we just take everything out, then there's going to be nothing left and the land won't be productive for So, I mean, that's an area of concern for me, but potentially everything could be utilized. Yeah, the question was, could potentially, since the pulpwood market has recently gone down, could people potentially use it just for biofuels now instead of paper or other industries that might be declining? And the answer is yes. I mean, anything can be utilized. Most of the wood residue that we have right now, I think I said earlier, it's used to just fuel lots of timber production already. So I don't know like what the market will look like in 10 years, but presumably, yes, that could be.
Let's give Amelia a round of applause.